Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
Welcome one and all to the Squawker Talker podcast. I'm your host, Greg Johnson, and today we're going to be talking about the transfers that happened so far in the season and the deals that are still to come. I'm joined today by Greg Stobart. How are you doing, Greg?
I'm very good, thanks, Greg.
I'm also joined by James McManus. How are you today?
Very well, thank you. Very well.
Beautiful, beautiful.
Very formal as well, that was.
Very well, wasn't it? Well, it's all about to go downhill from here. We're starting today with Arsenal. There's been a bit of talk about signings both at in attack and in defence. Greg, I'm going to come to you first. Lacazette. Leon have said that Arsenal have bid and they've declined the initial offer, and now they've gone back with a £33 million proposal, I believe. What's going on with that transfer?
They haven't yet. And funny enough, let's start with this first bid. This first bid they made back in June, the bid was more than a month ago, and it's quite funny the timing that Leon have chosen to put their statement out on Tuesday saying that they'd rejected this bid from Arsenal. I'm not sure Arsenal are that keen. I don't think he would have been at the top of their list. They were watching Lacazette and Michy Batshuayi for quite a lot last season, and there are concerns about both of them outside the penalty area. But it looks like they're going to make another bid. From what I've been told, €40 million, which is about £33 million, will be their second and probably final bid, because they don't value him as any more than that, which is what Michy Batshuayi went to Chelsea for. So basically, that's their mark. They're not going to go above that.
I think you said in the previous podcast that Arsenal's kind of dithering over Kante meant that he kind of lost interest and eventually went to Chelsea. That was part of the reason why he didn't go to the Emirates this summer. Is there any sense that maybe, you say it's been a month since the first bid, at least, is there any chance that Arsenal, again, they're just dithering over this deal when actually they need to be more decisive to close these kind of transfers up?
Yeah, and historically that's what Arsene Wenger's been like, to be honest. He's so careful. He has second thoughts a lot of the time, and we've seen that with strikers in the past, you know. A couple of years ago, it was Higuain. They've had it with Luis Suarez. They had it with Benzema as well. He finds it difficult to make his mind up when there's such big money involved. I mean, the only time you've really seen him go for it is Mesut Ozil and Alexis Sanchez, which you would say are as close to sure things as Arsenal could have got. But when it's a €40 million gamble, Arsene Wenger doesn't really like to do it.
Mm-hmm. James, there's a lot of money in the Premier League this summer. It's very abundant by all the transfers that are going on. Liverpool have bought some interesting players. Man United obviously restocked their squad. City, they've got Pep, they've got a few new faces coming in as well. I mean, Arsenal need to start making the most of all these savings they've apparently got stored up, isn't it?
Absolutely. I mean, if they're saying £33 million is their final offer for Lacazette, like, they have ample funds to reinvest this summer. What are they saving the money for? It's not Arsene Wenger's money. He doesn't get to keep it when he retires. And
Does he know that?
I'm not sure. Maybe the jury's out on that one. But I think Wenger is a strange manager in the transfer market, because he dictates terms that the market doesn't go by. Mm. No one else is making these final terms. This is what we value him at. Oh, if he goes, not our fault. But. Mm. It's not up to him to dictate what a player's worth. I think Allegri said he was questioned in a press conference on Higuain, £79 million, Pogba, £100 million, and he said, it's not down to me. I don't dictate the market. The players do, and the prices do, and the clubs do, because everyone's price has skyrocketed because there's so much more money in football. Wenger hasn't adapted to that whatsoever. If Lacazette's going to score you 15 league goals, he's worth £33 million. It's not up to him to decide that.
I think it's quite interesting. You say not dictating terms. The other player they went for had a release clause, Jamie Vardy, so they did know the price then and they found it reasonable. Whereas, like Macca says, if you've got to negotiate with Leon, Lacazette will go for what Leon wants to sell him for, and at the moment they're saying he's indispensable. But certainly from an Arsenal point of view, they desperately need a striker. Even if it ends up being a backup or a rival to Olivier Giroud and not the top quality A-list striker, they need something, because they're not good enough up there at the moment.
Well, the other end of the field as well, talking about players that have got set release clauses that are publicly known. Mustafi has apparently been offered around to all the clubs of Europe for £25 million. It's a German international defender. Had a very good couple of seasons as well with Valencia. He was the guy who was doing the covering work for Otamendi before his big move to City last year. Maka, is this the perfect Mertesacker replacement?
I mean, on the face of it, it looks like it is. He's got a bit more pace than Mertesacker. The idea would be, I guess, because Szczęsny would step out and intercept, which he's very good at doing, and Mustafi, he's had to play that sort of covering role a bit deeper for Germany before when he plays with Hummels, who's even slower. So he's used to playing, he's used to being the covering centre-back. He's good in the air. Interestingly, he was at Everton for a couple of years, but couldn't break through under Moyes, another young player of Moyes ignored at Everton. Eric Dier as well, and went to Sampdoria, revitalised his career. I think if it's 25 million, then it's a no-brainer, really.
That's half his release clause, I think, as well. So pretty, you know, you're talking about a crazy market, pretty good value when Arsenal need that long-term leader. I mean, leader's a bit of an airy-fairy word, but they do need someone in there doing that
per
job.
Mertesacker's had the chance. He's had four or five seasons to be the leader of that defence, and he's just not done it either.
He just needs to come out in the summer with weird digs at the team, doesn't he? That seems to be his role.
He's a nice guy, and he's a decent centre-half, and he is a top-four quality centre-half, I think, in a rotation. But, I mean, he's not getting any younger, and he's never really stamped his authority. There's always been question marks over him, and they're never going to go away. So is it just a case of we've got the money, let's replace him now sooner than later? I think it's a good move, Mustafi.
And obviously, Mertesacker's injured now as well. So, yeah. I mean, one scenario where Arsene Wenger might get the hurry up is when he's forced by injuries to make a change. And I don't think they're planning on Rob Holding starting on the first day of the season. So maybe they'll have to go for Mustafi.
Well, at Euro 2016, Mustafi didn't just play in centre-back. He also played as a full-back for some games as well. And in La Liga last season, he averaged 11 defensive actions per game, 168 clearances, 133 interceptions, 124 tackles in 30 appearances, an 81% pass accuracy rate, and he also made 55 fouls, which maybe might put him off Wenger. Did you think, for the money, that's clearly a good value signing, especially in this market, isn't it, Stobes?
Yeah, like you said, worth a gamble. The problem with Wenger is he will never take that gamble, and I think it's a pretty sure thing. I mean, how much would they sell him for in a couple of years' time? Not a lot less than 20, 25 million. Anyway, like Maka said before, it sounds like a good fit for Arsenal. We know they want a top-quality centre-back, but Arsene Wenger always bleats about value in the market and he only wants to sign the very best, but I think it would make a lot of sense.
Just one more thing on Arsenal. Mahrez, do we know if the interest has cooled on bringing him to the Emirates, or was it ever really something that was going to happen?
I don't think there's ever been that much interest in Mahrez. I think he's been assessing his options, the player, finding out what clubs might be interested. I think Arsene Wenger likes him, but from what people at Arsenal told me, no plans to make a bid, and there never have been. Not a place for him in the squad, really. He's packed with players who could play out there. And like we're talking about the money, Arsene Wenger isn't going to pay £45 to £50 million for Riyad Mahrez.
Fair enough. One player that is going to move for very big money by the looks of it this summer, not even breaking the world transfer record. If he goes to United, Paul Pogba is going to smash the world transfer record. Almost like how Zinedine Zidane did when he went from Juventus to Real Madrid for, I think, was it 70-odd million back in the day, which was a huge,
56
huge amount.
Million? I think you just converted it into euros.
Maybe you have. Maybe that's what I've done. But it was a huge amount of money. Huge amount of money compared to the actual going rate of other players at the time. I mean, what's the hold-up with the deal, Stubbs? Everybody seems to want it to happen, apart from maybe Mino Raiola. So what's the deal there?
Oh, Mino's desperate for it to happen, and it's going to happen. It's been pretty sure for at least a week now, to be honest. Once Juventus accepted that they were going to take the money, the £100 million, it was always going to happen. The player wants it. That £300,000 a week contract has long been agreed. And the issue since early in the week has been sorting out this clause for Mino Raiola to pay him 20% of the clause. And basically, Juventus don't want to give Mino Raiola a penny. They're pretty annoyed with him.
So it's on Juventus, it's not on United to pay that fee?
Well, I think United might have to make it happen. Really, it should be Juventus. Then there's negotiations. Can they split it? Will United pay it? But eventually, when everyone's committed to the deal, when Juventus have already gone out and signed Higuain, there's no way this won't happen now. Oh, actually, there's only one way. Real Madrid do something absolutely mental, but it won't happen.
Well, why would it happen? Why would Real Madrid completely off the table then?
Or, yeah, they're not going to pay the money. So.
Just
my tiny little caveat. That's the only way it could possibly stop, but it won't happen.
Fair enough. One thing that people are concerned about, especially United fans, are looking at this deal. They're licking their lips over the prospect of the player, but is there any chance that the fee could actually hamper him? I mean, how do you live up to a 9-figure transfer fee, James?
It's a crazy fee for a very... He's a world-class player. There's no two ways about it. He got 12 assists in Serie A last season. I think it was 8 goals. So he does have end products, but I mean... The other people that have gone for world record fees have all been goal scorers or really eye-catching players. I think Zidane and Figo were probably the last ones who went for such record fees, who were midfielders who had not, but there wasn't quite the pressure on them to deliver these Messi and Ronaldo type stats back then. And I think he's going to have a lot of pressure on him. And there's also a thing about what role he's going to play.
Mm.
You wrote a piece this week saying, trying to explore what position he play in Man United's midfield. Is it box to box? Is it a deep lying playmaker? I think we saw with France that's not really where he should be playing. Is it a free role? And does Mourinho, how many free roles can Mourinho afford with Mkhitaryan, Ibrahimovic and Rooney in there as well? So there's a lot of question marks over what role he'll play. I think he's going to be judged very unfairly initially, but I think in the long term he's a fantastic signing for United.
Dopes, is he worth it, I guess? I mean, not just the price on the pitch, but also his potential as a commercial asset to United, who we all know are as much a kind of money-making corporation as a football club these days. Rooney's obviously been the face of their commercial activity over the last few years.
What a face, eh, as well.
What a face. But, he has, for all the strange aesthetic reasons of that. Is Pogba, I guess two questions for you. Is Pogba a threat to Rooney in that he's now going to make the scrutiny fall on his actual football performances rather than his marketing opportunities? And can Pogba kind of take that role as the face of Man United on in the future?
I think that's got to be part of the plan, obviously. Paul Pogba's boot deal is with Adidas as well, which will help Man United. Rooney's a Nike player. He's one of the most marketable players in the world. He's also 23, which means if you can get 8-9 years out of him, look at the way your market's gone in the last few years. What are we going to be paying for a top quality central midfielder in 5-6 years' time when he'll still be at his peak? So I think that's the thinking for Man United. There will be a marketing element to it. And Man United can afford it. We've been in this pod since the start of the summer saying they can afford to spend £100 million
quite
on
literally. Feed us.
That, you know, Edward was desperate to sign Neymar. That would have been even more money. Mm. You know, Gareth Bale, they tried to sign in the past. They've wanted this marquee player on the pitch and for the marketing aspect as well. Like Macca says, Pogba isn't the kind of player though who's going to go out and score 30 goals and get 20 assists and be 9 or 10 out of 10 every week. He's your box-to-box consistent 8 out of 10 every week kind of midfielder, and I think there's a danger that United and their supporters will expect too much from him too soon.
I mean, the last marquee signing United made, especially in midfield from a foreign league, was obviously Juan Sebastian Veron, and he, as much as many fans actually really loved watching him at Old Trafford, he never quite lived up to the billing. Is Pogba the new Veron, James?
I mean, Veron was always great in Europe for United, which I think was overlooked, and he was kind of signed to do that role as well. He was signed because Scholes was going through a dip in form, and it also sort of revitalised Scholes to own that position again. There's no one really in United's midfield to challenge Pogba in the same way, but I just can't reinforce enough that we can't be judging Paul Pogba on assists and goals. That's not what he's there for. If he does them, great, and he will do them, but that's not his job is not to score goals. So if he gets 10 Premier League goals next season, that's a fantastic season for him.
This must be like a landmark moment if United do blow Real Madrid out of the water for a player that they clearly do want in a football sense. I mean, what does this say about the landscape of European football now? What does it say about the Premier League's rising financial might? Does it say that Real Madrid and Barcelona have kind of been caught up with the English clubs now? Or is this more of a Man United thing?
Well, it's certainly interesting. I mean, we saw Barcelona announce £500 million turnover, so they're not doing too badly over in Spain. But certainly with the Premier League TV deal, with the commercial deals, I expect Man United in the next Deloitte report will be confirmed as the richest club in the world. And the TV deals are only going to get bigger and bigger. And I think one issue with Pogba is, for Real Madrid, I think it was more about wages because the wage bills are so high now and clubs are having to look at their wage bill as a percentage of turnover. And if Man United can afford to give him all that money and make him the star, but if he'd gone to Real Madrid on £300,000 a week, he'd been on the same money as Gareth Bale, who's looking for a new contract. Only Ronaldo would have been earning more than him. Ramos might have got annoyed. All these players might have got annoyed. Whereas at Man United, they've got the freedom to give him that kind of money. I think that was one of the big concerns for Real Madrid, more than the transfer fee.
I think it shows how rich United are that Barcelona, pretty much after they signed Andre Gomes for €45 million, they said, yeah, we wanted Pogba, he was just too expensive. So they've kind of had Pogba earmarked for 2-3 years. Barcelona have slowly been going through a style shift under Luis Enrique, but they've been looking for a long-term replacement for Iniesta. And because Iniesta's going to struggle to play 50 games every season now. And I think they've earmarked for two, three years that Pogba's the man to come in that midfield.
Well, I remember after the 2015 Champions League final, like there was an agreement, apparently.
It just looked nailed on in the same way Neymar was always probably going to edge Barca over Real Madrid as well. It just always looked that they had that little bit of an edge, and that's the Stardust and Messi, I think. But, I mean, Barcelona just admitting, yeah, we can't compete with that. We've signed this, albeit another very, very good midfielder anyway. But that's their long-term plan up in smoke because United are just so, so wealthy.
Another European team trying to really get to that bracket of the really top superclubs and probably try and win the Champions League this year are Juventus. Obviously, they're the team Paul Pogba would be leaving this summer. I spoke to Adam Digby, straight from Turin, about Pogba, whether he could stay, Higuain, who's obviously moved there for a huge amount of money, and what's happening in the world of Juventus. So obviously it's been a very busy summer for Juventus so far, and it could get even busier with the news that Paul Pogba could depart. What's the general feeling like in Turin about Paul Pogba? Is there any hope that he could yet stay at the club?
I think there's a little bit of hope that he'll still stay, but I think with Pogba, ever since he joined Juventus, I think everybody's been fully aware that he would move on at some point. It was much more surprising, for example, that Arturo Vidal left last summer rather than Pogba. I think with the signing of Higuain, you have to hope that he would stay, because I think there's a very real chance Juventus are Champions League contenders this year.
But do you think, given that the money's already been spent on Higuain, there's a bit of a deficit in the current account to some extent, that the Juventus have to sell Pogba now that they've spent that money?
No, certainly not. They're in a very strong financial position. They've got some of the fringe players who they're looking to sell, like Simone Zaza and Roberto Pereira. And, of course, they're very much benefited from the fact that, for some reason, Gonzalo Higuain's clause, they've been able to pay it over two summers rather than in a lump sum, which that seems very odd to me, because the clause seems low in itself originally at $90 million. A lot of these clauses are a ridiculous amount that nobody would ever pay, and this seems low and then manageable by being able to pay it in two lump sums. So with regards to Pogba, I don't think the two are related at all, although I still wouldn't be surprised if he did move on, because I don't think any club's in a position to refuse that sort of money for a player like Pogba.
And just one last point on Pogba. There's been a lot of talk about where he'll play at Manchester United, what kind of player he was. At the Euros, we saw him play a deeper role, more defensively, perhaps, with France. Obviously, you've seen a lot of Pogba. You've seen him blossom from a youngster to possibly Juventus' best player over the last few years. Where would you see him fitting in the Premier League with all the different types of football and maybe the more physical nature of the midfield in England?
He's very much, for all he's got so many different qualities, he can do so many different things. He is a complete midfielder. He always plays better on the left of a three-man midfield. It's not when he's not given the responsibility of having to be the most defensive player, or the most attacking player, really. He's sort of best in that in-between kind of role where he can do a bit of both. He has a really good understanding there at Juve with Patrice Evra, and I was very surprised he didn't play there for France for that same reason. That's definitely his best role, as free as possible, really, to do whatever he feels is best to suit it to impact a game.
And speaking of impact players, as you were saying, Higuain, he now gives Juventus this like look of a team that could be contenders in the Champions League. What do you think he'll bring to Juventus besides just his goals?
To be honest, I think that's it. Very, very much. They had Mandzukic, who's a hard-working player. They had Morata, who's a willing runner. They need a player who's going to guarantee them 25, 30 goals. Hopefully he'll strike up a good partnership with Paulo Dybala. And I think, if you're looking for something other than goals, I think more than anything it's the prestige of Juventus being able to go out and spend €90 million on one player. It's very much throwing down a gauntlet to their rivals, I think, in the Champions League.
A lot of people compared Juventus's transfer business this summer to Bayern Munich's attempts to buy out all their rivals in the Bundesliga. Obviously, Pjanic has also come to Juve from Roma. Is this healthy for Serie A, or is it more a case of Juventus are just doing everything it takes to try and win the Champions League again?
I think it's It's definitely the latter. It's very much Juve doing the best they can. I think they've made Serie A much easier for themselves, even though it was already kind of getting that way anyway. They've taken the best player from their two closest rivals. And in Pjanic's case in particular, again, the buyout clause at €30 million is ridiculously low for a player of that quality. So that really doesn't help Roma or Serie A's competitive balance at all. I think a lot of what happens in next season with Serie A will depend on how Napoli reinvest the money from Higuain, because if they don't do that wisely, I think the gap between Juve and the rest is even bigger than it's been in seasons past.
I think a lot of people say that the one downside of Higuain is, obviously this is mainly with Argentina, but he's sometimes fluffed the chances in the really big moments, especially when it comes to potentially giving Messi all the international titles that Messi fans believe he should have won. Given that Morata's gone back to Real Madrid, a player that he scored in so many like semi-final and latter stage ties of the Champions League, is there a chance that Juve, if we've got a player who's got quantity of goals, will they miss Morata's ability to pull out the goals in the big games?
I think definitely so. I think a player like that is invaluable. He scored in the Champions League final against Barcelona. He scored in both legs of the semi-final. He scored against Bayern Munich. He scored in the very last kick of his very last game with Juve, which was an injury time in extra time winner in the Coppa Italia, the only goal of that match. His pedigree is almost, it's the exact opposite of Higuain, isn't it? Higuain scores goal after goal after goal and then chokes on the biggest stage, and Morata really scores very few goals, but when he does, they tend to be very, very important. Hopefully, I think Juve will hope that somebody else, whether it's Dybala or Piaco or Pjanic or even Pogba, if he stays, can step up and be that guy, and Higuain can carry them the rest of the way. I think they've proven that they're a very strong team and a very strong squad over the past few seasons, and if Higuain makes that easier to get to finals, I think they'll take that all day long if someone else can step up and shine in the big moments.
You mentioned Dybala there, and after Pogba, maybe even ahead of Pogba in the eyes of some people, he is the big talent in Italian football at the moment. Just how good do you think he could become? Some people even compare him to Messi, possibly because he's Argentinian and he likes to dribble. But I mean, how big of a player could he be for Juve next season, with maybe all the focus on him after Pogba's departure?
I think it could be huge. When you look at last summer, Juve spent €40 million to get Dybala, a player who just scored 13 goals for Palermo, and you think, well, that's maybe a bit of a reach, maybe a bit expensive, but he weighed in with 21 goals, 10 assists last year in his first season at Juve. I think that's a fantastic return for a player so young, still only 22.
Are there any other parts of the team that you'd like to see the team also reinforce? Any other targets that you think might be in mind for Allegri this summer?
I think maybe they've signed Marco Piaka, the Croatian international winger. I think they could maybe do with another winger, perhaps a Cuadrado, to give some balance if Allegri wanted to play 4-3-3, because I think sticking Dybala out wide in that kind of formation is really going to limit his effectiveness. And apart from that, no, I think if Pogba stays especially, you've got a very strong midfield with Marquisio, Kadira, Pjanic, Pogba. You've got an incredibly strong defence that's got two men deep in every position. Obviously, you've got Gigi Buffon in goal. I think it's a very strong squad and has the potential to go all the way in every competition.
That was Adam Digby, author of Juventus, A History in Black and White, and also a football writer for beIN Sport 442 and Sport 360. Just moving on to Manchester United more generally, the reports in the press saying Mourinho's clear out will begin in earnest this week or next. Stopes, who do you think will be leaving Old Trafford this summer?
I don't think there are going to be any big surprises, Greg. We kind of know the players that don't fit into Mourinho's plans. Marcus Rojo, for a start, let's start there. Daley Blind, Bastian Schweinsteiger, Juan Mata. Interestingly, most of them are the less physical ones, the less athletic players, the ones who traditionally wouldn't fit into his methods anyway. But Mourinho did come in and he said everyone gets a fresh slate, but pretty obvious after a couple of weeks he's made his mind up on a few of them.
James, who do you think United still need to sign? What are the positions you look at that squad and go, there's a bit of a weakness there?
I mean, Mourinho's famous for he wants two players for every position, but no more. So he wants maybe a squad of 22 to 24, just maybe a couple of spillover young players for injuries to come in. So I think you look at Man United's squad, and to me, even though they signed Eric Bailly, they need an experienced centre-half. Smalling's good. He had a very good season last year, I thought. I thought David Bin was very good in there at times, but he doesn't really fit Mourinho's philosophy. Eric Bailly, again, no one really knows that much about him. People can pretend they know loads about him, but he's looked good in the preseason games. But again, it could be a mixed bag, might take time to adjust. Phil Jones, they just have to get rid of. He's, what, 25, still doesn't really have a position. And that Ferguson quote about him being the best signing since Duncan Edwards at Man United is just looking more and more ridiculous by the season. So they need a centre-half, definitely. I think at right-back, they still look a bit weak. Darmian, I mean, hardly pulled up any trees last season, did he? And if you're still resorting to playing Antonio Valencia or Ashley Young at times, and Varela's gone out on loan to Frankfurt, like, they do need someone there. And I think they look reasonably covered in midfield and out wide and up front. They could maybe do with another winger, but it all depends on how they use Depay this season.
Stopes, I mean, Fabinho's the guy who's been linked mainly for the right-back slot. But there's also talk that now that David Moyes has gone to Sunderland, he could take Yanezai with him. Yanezai's played a fair bit in the pre-season. So do you think we're going to see any movement at right-back, and do you think maybe we'll see any of the wingers already at the club leave this summer?
I don't know, mate. I agree with you. I think we'll probably see someone come in at right-back. It's a real shame because Darmian looked really good for the first five or six games, didn't he? And maybe Mourinho will you would have thought maybe Mourinho would see something in him and develop him, but it doesn't sound like he's been particularly impressed with what he's seen. Certainly, Yanezai will go, I think, on loan at least. I think he'll keep Depay. I think he might give him another shot. He's not going to play a lot. I think a few of them, someone like Depay, I think Mourinho will say, you're not going to play every week, but you will have the chance if you want to stay here and prove yourself.
To me, Fabinho looks nailed on. Monaco played a pre-season game against Galatasaray last night. I think they lost 2-1. And Fabinho played in midfield. They've already signed his replacement, Cisse, from within League One. The club escapes me. But they've already signed his replacement. This Higuain, Juve, Pogba money all over again. They know he's going. It's just a matter of how much and when, I think.
Fair enough. Over on the other side of Manchester, obviously the Pep Guardiola revolution carries on at City as we gear up to his first season in the Premier League. He's apparently banned junk food. He's sent certain players away from the training ground because they're overweight. There's also rumours in Argentina that Aguero is overweight, which is awful news for City fans there. He's clearly their star player. He's also hinted that Fernando and Fernandinho could even play at centre-back, kind of repeating the kind of tricks he did at Barcelona and Bayern. I think generally what I want to ask is Pep going to adapt to the English Premier League, or is the English Premier League going to have to catch up with Pep Guardiola? Greg, what do you think?
It's got to be a bit of both, hasn't it? I think it's really exciting that he's going to bring his philosophy, his tactical astuteness to the Premier League. But it's a completely different type of football. It's far more competitive than every week at Bayern Munich or Barcelona when you're winning every single game. So it's got to be both. I think he's going to find that out pretty quickly. I mean, we've been watching the game against Borussia Dortmund. He's playing Fabian Delph in midfield, and you're thinking, actually, there might be a role for him under Pep Guardiola, and you might not have thought that before the summer. So I think he's adapting quite quickly, and he's showing his strength as well. We know him as this tactician who brings beautiful football to the game, but I think he's quite a tough guy as well.
I think when Delph said he's learnt more in 3 weeks under Guardiola than he has in his entire career put together, then that spoke volumes for what he does on the pitch. Mm. He said about Fernandinho and Fernando playing centre-half, he says, if you're a centre-back and you launch it forward to the striker, it's just going to come straight back. But if you have a midfielder and playing centre-half and he can pick a pass 30 yards, then you retain possession and you create angles for midfielders and strikers, which makes a lot of sense when you think about it. You just think, why doesn't every manager think like that? But for me, Fernandinho, as long as they can replace his energy in centre mid, because he's been City standout, quietly underrated player for 2-3 seasons now. As long as they can replicate his energy and replace it, which looks like they can maybe do with Delph and Gundogan, then that's important. But I mean, if he's going to turn up with the same tricks that he's used at other clubs, City aren't the level of the two clubs he's coached previously. This is by far his biggest challenge. This is by far the most competitive league. He's not going to be able to turn up and steamroller teams, playing players in crazy positions. It's not going to really work in the Premier League. So he is going to have to adapt a lot.
Some of the players that have been linked with City to kind of expand the squad as Pep needs. We've got John Stones, Leroy Sané, Gabriel Jesus, even Reece Oxford. I mean, do we expect to see his deals, or is this more paper talk, Stobes?
I think Sané will happen. I don't know how much. I think they're talking 40-odd million for him, but he's a long-term, even before Pep, City were looking at him, and I think that will happen. Likewise, Gabriel Jesus, I've not seen anything of him, but City are confirming off the record that's close, that one.
Okay.
It sounds like that will happen. Yeah, the big one will probably end up being John Stones if it happens. We know City wanted Bonucci first, and that was never going to happen, really, I think.
Yeah.
Especially with the Pogba deal already. Juventus aren't going to weaken their squad like that. So if they sign John Stones for £50 million, they're pretty crazy, but I think that might happen.
To me, £50 million, you know my feelings on John Stones, Greg. £50 million for a guy that can't head the ball is a mind-boggling amount for a centre-back. He is good in the ball, but he gets caught on it a lot. He picks the wrong pass a lot. I think if you're paying £50 million on what could be tomorrow very good, or you can pay £50 million on a guy that's really good right now and is generally top three in his position in the world, you pay it for the one he's good now, don't you?
Mm-hmm.
So I think the market shows with Juve paying £79 million for a 29-year-old striker, the whole age to price barrier isn't really an issue as much anymore, because they've just got so much more money coming in anyway, clubs, that they don't have to think long term as much now.
Another question on City. I mean, that's the question of their defence, because Kompany is out for the foreseeable, as usual. And Stones, rightly or wrongly, an interesting signing, but it already looks a little bit muddled in attack. I mean, obviously, Aguero and De Bruyne are the first-choice guys, but then you look at the kind of the constellation of stars that are building around. You've got Iheanacho, you've got Boney, you've got Sterling, you've got Nolito, Navas, Zinchenko, Zuccolini from the academy side. You've also got Gabriel Jesus joining, potentially Leroy Sané. How are they going to play all these guys?
Well, you think a couple are going to have to go, aren't you? I mean, I'm surprised Jesus Navas is still there.
Yeah, he's so far out of his depth.
I don't think Guardiola's going to have too much patience with him running really fast and crossing it straight into someone's shins. So I think
he does that better than anyone, though, yeah, doesn't he? Yeah,
yeah. I don't think he'll last too long, but you're right, they do need to trim the squad. And the problem for City is they can't, you know, they've committed £50 million to Raheem Sterling. They can't give up on him, even if Pep wants to. So they've got to be quite clever.
Does Pep want to give up on
Raheem Sterling? No, I don't think he does. I don't think he does.
He sort of said that in his press conference. He said the media just focuses on Sterling's price, which has been bad for his time at City, which is a fair point. But I think that sort of betrayed his own mindset as well. I'm going to have to deal with this problem of Raheem Sterling's price tag. I've inherited this price tag. It's hung around his neck. It's probably going to hang around my neck if I leave him on the bench. So it's kind of like an awkward elephant in the room, like it was with Shevchenko at Chelsea. But it was an inherited, it was foisted upon Mourinho, you're having this £30 million striker. Whenever he left him on the bench, that was the headline, no matter what happened on the pitch.
Mm. Well, I think Sterling's going to start on the bench, isn't he? You'd expect so. But for Pep, it's the main thing is creating a pathway for some of the younger kids, the academy kids, which is why Navas got to go. Wilfried Bonny, surely he's got to go, even if they have to take a massive hit on the £30 million they spent to sign him in the first place, because you want Iheanacho playing every week and you want the kids coming through.
Bonny, though, he'd be fantastic at another Premier League club as a main striker, wouldn't he?
I mean, he's a mid-table striker. Swansea just have no one up front at the moment. They go with Eder, Gomis has left, Pelosi's left. And I saw rumour today that they're looking at Peter Crouch for £3 million. They are desperate.
Mm.
So I could see Bonny going back there. They've already missed out on Joe Allen while they've got this takeover going on in the background. So there are a lot of Premier League clubs that are scampering around. Hull, Sunderland, Everton. None of them have really made an impact in the market. He'd be great at Everton, Bonny.
West Ham, Crystal Palace, he could do a really good job for both of those. Yeah. Two.
Absolutely. Speaking of Everton, are they finally starting to flex their muscles? I mean, they haven't signed anyone yet, properly, apart from Stekelenburg.
Steve Walsh.
Yeah, Steve Walsh as well. But, I mean, they've got all this new money now. Are we going to actually start seeing some movement? They have Witzel's linked to them. Idrissa Gueye from Aston Villa's another name that's been linked. He's one of our Moneyball signings that we picked out on Football IQ last week. Second only to Kante for tackles and interceptions, I'll have you know. And, I mean, Arnautovic, he's now signed a new deal at Stoke, but he was also rumoured to be on his way to Everton. I mean, they need to get a move on, because the season is starting to get towards us. I mean, are we going to see movement on these deals soon, Stobes?
I think Everton are learning, a bit like West Ham did earlier in the summer, the problem you get when you tell everyone you've got loads of money to spend and you're really rich, because they'll use you. And Arnautovic has clearly got a much better contract out of Stoke, just like West Ham have been used by strikers like Batshuayi to get a move to a bigger and better club. I think Everton will be all right. I think they've hired the right manager. They've clearly got money to spend and they want to make a point. They want to make a statement signing. The Axel Witsel one is very complicated. There's third-party investors involved. There's complicated agents. It sounds to me like he doesn't really want it and he's waiting to for as long as possible to see a bigger or better club come in for him. But if the deal's done, you know, in a couple of weeks' time, Everton might look to try and push that one through. I mean, I've been told they're they're the only club that have actually made a proper inquiry for Mahrez.
Oh, wow.
They're not going to get him, obviously, but they're the only, they've actually, you know, they've got the Steve Walsh link there as well. Like you said, they've got the money, Farage Moshiri's money. They want to make a statement, and they've made an inquiry for Mahrez, which shows the level of their ambition that you're talking about Axel Witsel and Riyad Mahrez, player of the year, rather than the kind of players we've seen Everton signing in the last few seasons. But maybe they're getting a little bit ahead of themselves. Maybe they should do it a bit more incrementally, buy those solid players that can improve the squad rather than go out there and try and sign two or three superstars.
What about departures? If Stones does go, or I mean, even if a big offer does come in for Lukaku, which has been kind of trailed by some parties, is that going to change things? Will Everton suddenly have to go out and splurge and maybe try and sign Bonucci from Juventus? but seriously, how's that going to change things at Goodison Park?
Well, I think they're expecting to sell Stones, aren't they? Which is why they're looking at these, part of the reason they're looking at these big name players in the first place. But I don't think it'll change too much. Only Lukaku, really, you would think, because how many, like Maka said, how many top-class strikers are out there anyway? Mm. Lukaku's one of the best around. And I think they managed to put everyone off Lukaku, to be honest. When you're talking £65-70 million, after the Higuain move, they might even ask for more, to be honest. They've certainly scared Chelsea off, they've scared Man United off, they've scared Arsenal off. So I think they'll keep Lukaku anyway.
I think this is definitely Lukaku's last season at Everton, any two ways about it. But this is a pivotal moment in Everton's history. They have money, but what's always held them back is owners have been put off buying Everton because they're gonna have to build a new stadium. As great as otherworldly and old-fashioned as Goodison Park is, it isn't financially viable for a Premier League club that wants to become a powerhouse. So they've actually got a billionaire owner now, which is always the thing that tripped them up. But Lukaku's going in the next summer, no matter what happens. So they have this season to get to break the top six and get European football, which will actually make their money worthwhile. But I don't think Lukaku helps himself sometimes. He's very chatty to the press, isn't he? Trying to angle him away for moves. I think that might put off some bigger clubs. He's a tricky character to manage.
Liverpool, should we be expecting more things from them in the transfer market? Klopp has actually said, I think he's not that bothered about any more signings, but there's question marks over Alberto Moreno.
There's giant Anfield-sized question marks over Alberto Moreno. I can't believe he's going to play for Liverpool again. The rumours at the start of the summer with Jonas Hector, I don't know, because he had such a good Euros, that maybe Liverpool have been priced out of that a bit. But you look at the squads, Lovren and Matip, centre-half, that looks okay. Sacco maybe taking over Lovren. Klein's good at right-back. I think the midfield looks reasonably sorted. So is the attack. It's just that left-back role. They need to sign a left-back. Alberto Moreno should not ever play for Liverpool again.
Liverpool are doing quite well as sellers, though. I mean, they got £22 million for Jordan Ibe and Smith, selling them both to Bournemouth. That must be a good deal for Liverpool.
I mean, the Premier League, the new TV deal has directly affected Liverpool in a positive way, because Liverpool can sell their rubbish off for huge prices now. Not that Jordan Ibe is rubbish, but I would be surprised if Jordan Ibe ever gets more than 10 England caps in his career. And Brad Smith was released by Liverpool a couple of years ago and then re-signed when he couldn't find another club and we had an injury crisis. So Howie's now worth £6 million. I thought he looked decent in the games that he played. He looked very, very quick, good going forward, but he's not worth £6 million, is he?
I think one of the things Liverpool have to consider is they're not in Europe next year, so Klopp doesn't need the biggest squad in the world. Certainly need a left-back. It sounds like they've walked away from Ben Chilwell. They're happy to wait until next year for that one. I'm not sure that's the wisest idea, but streamlined squad, a week to work with the players between matches. I think Liverpool are going to have a really good season.
There's a lot of goals in the squad as well. I think Klopp has identified, unless Sturridge was scoring or Firmino was scoring, who else was getting the goals? So he's let Alan go. That's one goal a season we've lost. And we've brought in Wijnaldum and Mane. That's 20 goals a season we've added. So I think the all-round field of the squad, and like Greg says, without the pressure of European football, it's just a lot more places goals can come from now.
Almost like an incubator season to kind of see the real Klopp Liverpool come absolutely through about 12 months. Interesting. To finish the show, we're going to take some questions from Twitter. Did put out a tweet earlier and got some wonderful replies. So we're going to smash through them right now. First one from Sophie Zayn. Ignore the price. Who's a better signing, Kante to Chelsea or Pogba to Man United? Greg, I'm going to come to you first.
Kante to Chelsea. I can't ignore the price. It's impossible to ignore the price. I think Kante. Chelsea, without European football, after a disastrous season, have signed by mile the best central midfielder in the Premier League last season. Fantastic business for them.
James?
I'm going to ignore the price. I'm going to go Pogba to Man United just because of he he raises them up a level. I think Kante to Chelsea is obviously an amazing signing, and I think Chelsea will finish top four predominantly because of that signing. But looking 5 years, I think it's Pogba.
You might be sensing a theme in this next question, but from I am Kutcher Butler, it's 94 million. that's his name on Twitter. 94 million for Higuain or 120 million for Pogba?
Oh, I like these. I'll go for Pogba for this one. That's in euros, right?
I imagine so.
Yeah. Go for Pogba for that one because he's 6 years younger for a start, which is massive. Your buyback for Higuain is absolutely nothing. If they sell him in 5 years' time, it's going to be for about a tenth of the price. Whereas even if Pogba doesn't have the greatest career at Man United, they could still sell him for half the price in 3 or 4 years' time.
I think if we're talking 5 years, it's Pogba. If we're talking next season, it's Higuain by miles. The only thing that stopped Juve actually becoming that top three club in the world has they haven't really had a top-class centre-forward. They did have Tevez. Tevez was great, but then Tevez left just as it looked like they were getting it together. And they've had to muddle on with like Llorente, Mandzukic, Morata. Higuain is that next bracket up. I think they are nailed on semi-finals for Champions League potential winners because of that one signing.
Interesting. That's also what Adam said in the drop-in as well earlier. Kelvin on Twitter asked, Tielemans, any news? He actually asked specifically, any news on Tottenham? But I thought I'd open it out more. Tielemans, obviously he's someone who people know, let's not lie, from Football Manager. He's a bit of a wonder kid on there. He's one of those kind of players' names we always hear floated around by people on Twitter and other places. I mean, any movement, or is he going to stay at Anderlecht for the foreseeable?
I think he might stay at Anderlecht. Every big club in the Premier, he wants to move to England. His agent's got a good relationship with a lot of the big clubs. He was Romelu Lukaku's old agent, took him to Chelsea, Tottenham, Arsenal, both Manchester clubs, Liverpool. They're all watching this kid, no surprise. And he's been pretty impressive. I thought he was quite good against Tottenham actually last season in the Europa League. But I think he's going to do another year from the sound of things. I think it'll cost quite a lot of money. You're talking 25 to 30 million euros. I think the clubs just want to see him get another year under his belt, but fantastic player. And maybe, I mean, you ask about Tottenham there. They managed to sneak in and get Luka Modric just before everyone else, when everyone knew who he was. Maybe they could do the same with Tielemans, but it doesn't sound like it.
What a deal that would be. Anyway, that's the end of our show for this week. Thank you for joining us. Greg, thanks for coming on.
Cheers, Greg.
James, once again, thanks for joining us.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much.
Oh, thank you. As always, Squawker.com is there for all your football needs, features, interviews, analysis, or some comment pieces as well. We're also on Twitter at Squawker, Squawker News as well, if you want to get all the latest football news on Twitter. All other social media platforms, we're pretty much there now,
good,
aren't we, James?
Good plug-in. This is great. Just plug for 45 minutes.
Like,
just nodding. Yeah.
And of course, if you've got iTunes or any other, you know, your favourite podcast service, we're on there as well. Get subscribing. Get the Squawker podcast onto your device and keep listening. But anyway, thanks for joining us this time and see you soon.